Welcome to the Plant Cunning Podcast,
where we explore our relationship to plants, other people, and the mysteries of nature.
Coming to you from the High Allegheny Plateau in central New York,
we are your hosts, A.C. Staubel
and Isaac Hill. On this episode of the Plant Cunning Podcast, we are pleased to have astrologer Bill Meridian. Bill is a financial astrologer and has written many books about mundane astrology, financial astrology, and eclipses. So today we're going to talk about financial astrology and also talk about eclipses, eclipse paths, and get into what we can expect in the future of the U.S. So this is a little bit of an in-depth discussion, and for those of you who are intermediate astrology people, you're going to love it. And for those of you who are still beginners, you might want to listen to it a couple times. You're going to learn a lot either way. I'd also like to mention that the Plant Cunning Conference is going to be held at our small farm in central New York, July 26th through 28th. Tickets will be available in a couple weeks, but for now, save the date. We have Pam Montgomery, Becky Beyer, Seven Song, and a lot of other amazing herbalists and astrologers. And I'm also still doing Vedic astrology readings for donation. I can look at your chart from a Vedic perspective, see the karmic framework, and offer some basic remedies. So if you're interested in that, hit me up at info@plantcunning.com. And as always, please like, subscribe, share these with your friends, comment if you can on our Instagram, on the YouTube, leave us 5-star reviews on Apple Podcasts, and thank you for your continued support. Okay, hope you enjoy the episode. Okay, so today on the Plant Cunning Podcast, we are very honored to have Bill Meridian, and Bill is an astrologer, and he's well known for financial astrology and eclipses. This is a really fantastic book that came out maybe 10, 15 years ago, and there's just so much data and research in it. It's amazing. If anybody wants to learn about eclipses, the path, like eclipse paths, this is a great book to get the predictive power of eclipse paths. So, Bill, how are you today?
Well, fine. Thank you.
Good. So, you've done a lot of things in your life. You live in Vienna now. You've been on Wall Street. You're telling me about a lot of interesting things that you got into, Zen and other things. But what first got you on the planetary path? What got you interested in astrology and all this stuff?
Well, I got out. I bought my first stock when I was 17 in 1966. I was in engineering school my first year in college, and I switched to business, and I developed an interest in the stock market. I was going to NYU, which is in Greenwich Village and right just above Wall Street. And I then went to the graduate school. You know, one of my professors said, you're so interested in this. I teach at the graduate school. Why don't you come there? And I said very brilliantly, where's the graduate school? I didn't know there was a graduate school. So
wow.
I went down there and I did the 2-year program in 11 months, and I got out just in time to see everything I was taught not work. And I met Arch Crawford and a couple people. They had a group in New York called SIRE, Society for the Investigation of Recurring Events. They were an offshoot of the Foundation for the Study of Cycles. I joined the Cycles Foundation. I said, you know, there's cycles in lemmings, cycles in trees, cycles in egg production, and cycles in the stock market. And I said, wait just a minute. I had studied astronomy when I was a boy. 9.3 years and 18.6 years sound like the lunar node. And 3.8 something years sounds like Mars with something else.
Mm-hmm.
So I joined the foundation and I took some basic astrology classes in our fall of 72. And I met Judith Ora Ryan, who is still a friend of mine, a very fine professional astrologer. And she said, I'll tell you one thing, you'll never have any inheritance. I said, that's crazy. My father was worth about $20 million, and there was talk of running him for governor of New Jersey, and my father lost everything. So I was impressed by the prediction, depressed by the result.
Yeah, for and, sure.
My father,
I bet.
My father, brother, and I all have Saturn in the 8th and the Sun in the IC. I have Saturn and Pluto in the 8th. And so anyway, I wasn't going to inherit the 110th largest construction company in the United States. Airplanes, helicopters, a Ferrari, and 110-foot ship. So I said, I better get to work. And so I started studying because I was thinking, gee, if I could have warned my father that this might have occurred, you know, maybe I could have saved the family. And I started taking lessons. I took lessons for 2 years, 72 to 74. And I see a little 8.5 by 11 on the wall, astrology lectures in New York, John Hanley and Charles Jane. I didn't know who they were. And of course, I was totally blown away by Charles Jane. And so I became John Hanley's student. I became Charles Jane's good. He was like a father to me for the next 12 years. And I went to Al Morrison's class, and I was there with Dr. Lee Lehman, Arlene, my old friends, Arlene Nymark, Diana Rosenberg, Faith McInerney. And I said, where'd you get these computerized horoscopes? They said, oh, from Neil Mickelson, Astro Computing. And I said, but what are all those other symbols? And they said, well, those are asteroids from Eleanor Bach, and these are Uranian planets. And I became Eleanor's student. So I went to Eleanor Bach's classes, and I started to study Uranian with Dr. Edgar Wagner, Wayne Boer, Gary Christen, Hans Niggemann, Charles Jane knew some Uranian, Charles Emerson. And I had no interest, you know, I had an interest in the stock market, but then when people kept, you know, making observations that were very accurate, I started getting interested in people astrology. I started taking encounters. As I mentioned to you before we started, I then started taking encounter groups and got, for 10 years, I was at the Institute for the New Age of Man. I studied core energetic therapy with Dr. John Parakos, and people are saying, well, I'm afraid to let go with my love feelings, and the person has Venus square Saturn. I said, oh, I think I see a connection here. And I started to make all these associations, but you know, I was in a group, we had a center, a 300-acre center up north in New York. So you could go to a person and say, you know, I was, you know, in the group the other day, can I ask you, you know, how did you feel that way? What was your relationship with your mother like? And this went on for 10, 12, 13 years. And I swore, I said, that's it. I said, I'm 33. I live in Greenwich Village in a great apartment. I'm going to go out and enjoy myself. And I met a beautiful girl who's a martial artist and an astrologer. And I became a student of her Zen master, and then wound up at the monastery every weekend, repeating what I had just done for the previous 10 years. And he had studied with Hans Niggemann.
Wow.
And Admetus is the Uranian planet. It's like super Saturn. You know, if Saturn is real estate, Admetus is geology. If Saturn is not wanting to see something in yourself, Admetus, you become unable to see something. And so we had a guy named Duval who was very good at sitting. He never moved. And Master Pai says, Bill, you see Duval? Strong Admetus. And so they were outside work practice. He had to work around the monastery. He energizes everything. And same guy, Duval, takes, because he had this ability to do this work, takes a jackhammer, you know, bah, 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 in a stone. And I said to Master Pai, I said, strong Admetus going down into the earth. And so that's how a lot of my knowledge got. I didn't even know I was real. I didn't even realize I was, this was all happening.
Yeah.
And so that's how it got started. But I had no intention whatsoever of doing any of those things. It was like being caught in a wave at the beach. I only wanted to do stock market stuff. Which we thought, and I once said to Arch Crawford, I said, do you remember when we started this? He said, I know exactly what you're going to say. You thought it was going to be easy. I said, oh, yeah. The horoscope of the New York Stock Exchange. I met a New York Stock Exchange historian, and I said, what happened on that day? And he said, well, nothing. I said, what do you mean nothing? And he said, well, they were trading. What happened was the Secretary of the Treasury, it was Alexander Hamilton, started to sell government bonds in March. So people started to trade them. And in June, whenever we have this date, you know, for the stock market, a bunch of guys said, let's get rid of all these creeps and we're outside. Let's get rid of all those small people. And let's just guy with the big bucks. We're going to go inside. That's what happened on that day. They didn't start trading. And they weren't trading stocks. They were trading government bonds, but the bonds were printed on a heavy paper called stock, like the paper your diploma is on. So that's the New York Stock Exchange, except that it's not, which is why the chart doesn't work. And then there was the Bradley indicator. And Arch gave me the book. I read it. I said, well, wait a minute. What did he use on this, the Dow Jones? How many years did he go? How did he develop these weights? How did he develop the plus and minus signs? And there's no answer. And so I said, this is pretty thin soup. And so I was on Wall Street. I worked for different, I was doing fundamental analysis. We have to know all about the company. So I took a day off and I went down to Delaware on the bus to the Hall of Corporate Records, Secretary of State's office, which is a great ride. The bus, I think, leaves at 5. And so I went in there and I said, you know, I'm here. You know, I said, I wrote you a letter. I'd like to look at the records of these companies. I'd like to figure out when they were, when they began life, so to speak. And she said, well, let me explain what we do. She says, we have all these pages, a big folder, and opens it up. And there's the certificate of long form of good standing. And it says, this company was incorporated in Delaware. on June 5th, 1950 at 10 a.m. And then it says, they changed their name here and they reincorporated over here. And I said, well, how does this work? And she said, well, I have like 10 or 20 from the previous day. I come in the morning and I go through, I make sure all the folders are complete so they can be filed. And then she takes a stamp and she hits each one of them, 10 a.m. that day. And I said, so if I wanted to sue the company at 9:59, I would not be able to. She said, that's right, because it didn't exist until 10 a.m. Mm-hmm. And so I collected like 60 or 80 of these because I had to follow these companies. Not all companies are incorporated in Delaware, but if they are, they have to have an exact time on their papers.
Uh-huh.
Most of the time it's 10, sometimes it's 1, but I got one here that I'm working on. It's like 3:40 something in the afternoon. So can you get an accurate chart of incorporation? Absolutely, if it's incorporated in Delaware.
Mm-hmm.
If it's in other states, it's usually you assume 001 because they say, well, it became active on that day, begins at midnight. And I said to the lady, I said, could you, if I wanted to incorporate at a specific time and date, could I do that? And they said, yeah, if you give us 2 weeks notice. I said, do you get many requests? And she lowered her voice and said, well, some people are into the stars. And I said, really?
Those strange people.
Yeah. And then I began to notice that the companies I was following, we have to predict the earnings of the company and issue an opinion. And the companies are not similar. I had trucking companies that have highly unpredictable earnings. And then I had food companies that were highly predictable. And we had an earnings predictability index based on all the earnings predictability of the companies. So after 2 or 3 years at the Value Line Investment Survey, the boss said, you're coming in, your earnings predictions are very accurate, much more than anyone else's. Well, that's because, how much astrology did I know? The chart is either indifferent, which it is about 80% of the time. In other words, it's not aspected, or it's really beaten up, in which case I'd skew my estimates down. And if it were very well aspected, I'd skew them up.
Yeah.
And so that's how that started. But one day I noticed a stock, this is after I left Value Line, the early 80s, a stock had a solar eclipse, a lunar eclipse on Venus in Aquarius. It was Time Warner. They had invented the Atari game system, Venus in Aquarius, enjoying yourself with one of the very early systems. And the stock collapsed. I said, what the hell happened? I then got the horoscope when it was, let me go into a little detail. When the stock lists on the exchange, we call that the chart of first trade, but it's really chart of first listing because it implies that it started trading exactly at that time, which up until September 1985, the market opened at 10 a.m. Now it's 9:30 since September 85. So even George Beyer in 1948, he wrote that the 10 a.m., it's like a store. If the store doesn't open at 10 a.m., you can't buy anything. You can't buy anything at 9:59 or 9:50. It's when the store opens. He said, if somebody buys the first item at 10:20, it's a secondary chart. But the important one is when the store opens and when the stock begins trading. And the trading opens up at 9:30. Occasionally, the market is locked, which means if it's a new issue, there's so much demand for it, they can't sort all the orders out. And so it just says, there's no change in the price. And then maybe at 10 o'clock, 10:15, in the case of Netscape, it was like 11:30, then it starts moving. Well, it's actually, my position is it is trading, it's just that the price isn't moving. And I tried taking these angles from different, the moment when the stock actually starts fluctuating, because some people think my contention is it's already open for trade, you can place an order, it's just that the price isn't moving yet because there's such demand for the stock. That was the case with Facebook and with Netscape. And so I've tested out the angles using solar arcs, and it is the 9:30 a.m. and the 10 a.m. angles that work. And so in the case of Time Warner, they had a Sun-Jupiter conjunction in the 10th house. Time Warner was very much a hot stock. You turn on your AM radio and it says, well, Time Warner is up, 5 points this morning. Well, Saturn sailed right over the Sun-Jupiter conjunction and the stock stopped trading at 53 and opened up the next day at 32.
Wow.
Huh.
And so I said, I think I should start looking at the horoscopes of first trade.
Yeah.
And so I had a call in New York Stock Exchange and I said, I was with a member firm, so they can't turn my request down. you know, two very nice guys. Now, I'll never forget, Rich and Hugh. And I said, look, I'd like to, could you give me, tell me when the stock started trading? I said, sure. And I said, well, look, I'm collecting a lot of them. I'm finding them useful in you know, market prediction. Do you mind if I call and ask you for five or six? I don't want to overburden you guys. I said, well, no, we don't. I said, well, what days are you not busy? And, you know, should I call you after the close? Yeah, like 4:15. So I'd get 10 at a time. Well, by the time I got to Payne Webber, I had 800. And I had them, you know, those Neil Mickelson charts, you know, that used to pay $2 to have them run off the computerized horoscopes. And I had 800 from A to Z. And by the end of the week, Payne Webber was so frantic. They were all mixed up. They were dog-eared, torn. Some of them were lost. And so that's when I computerized that. So now, of course, you can scoot through them all. I mean, I have right now on this PC, I have 3,100 that are active. On the PC, I have a total of 20,000 globally. Wow. And I have about 10 to 12,000 horoscopes of incorporation. But when I was working with Shinsei Bank, they call that the charter of the company. They don't call it incorporation. But every country has this.
Yeah.
And so I scanned through them. And in my book, Planetary Stock Trading, I you know, when you are responsible for the company on Wall Street, when they report earnings, you want to be reasonably accurate, because the Value Line Investment Survey, where I used to work, has shown that if the earnings are more than one standard deviation from Wall Street's average estimate, you get a sharp reaction either up or down.
Yeah.
And so it's like, you know, it's like I asked any astrologer, I have a meeting in Chicago Wednesday at 9 a.m. in the morning. Could you tell me what it's going to be like? Well, they would do a synastry between that day and that time and your chart. Well, that's what I started doing. And just this, it's around here somewhere. I just sold short on Thursday night for Friday trading Yelp, Y-E-L-P, because Saturn was square their North Node Ascendant conjunction. Mm-hmm. And the stock dropped 10%.
Mm.
It's not always that easy. It's when I first started doing this, I thought I was on the way to becoming the next pharaoh of Egypt, because it was right about 60% of the time, 65. But you have to remember, it's like a baseball player. If he hits 300, sometimes he hits 500, and you think you're a genius, and other times 100, and you feel like Frankie the Rat. You know. So I would go through these periods when I got hot and cold, mm-hmm. which I learned to identify from my chart. But
yeah.
These are all written over here, and I type all, and I have actually 500 to 600 word pages of notes of all the ones that worked and the ones that didn't work, because there were some, I have an X file where I cannot explain why the stock went up or down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so then I look at heliocentric, look at asteroids. And I just took 2 years vibrational astrology with David Cochran. I'm still studying that with Dr. Linda Berry and the Dwarf Planet University. Huh. Down in New Zealand. I said, well, these are real planets. I have no idea yet whether they have any effect on stocks or not.
Yeah.
So right now, as I'm talking, I'll be 75 in April. And right now, I really, my goal was to have most of the money come from my own trading, which it does, because the institutions pay very well. But the guys I know, they retire, you know, they leave uh-huh. the companies, they fold up their businesses. And so that has gone down while the personal trading gains have gone up.
Right. Well,
so that's what I do. So, yeah. So I do astrology, and I write, you know, I just sent it out this morning. It's an institutional letter, because that's what I did. I was with Abu Dhabi Investment Authority for 13 years. And actually the guy, if you want me to tell you how that happened, the guy came to see me in the summer of 89. I had been laid off from Payne Webber, and I was working out of my apartment trying to do what I'm doing now. But of course, I had a 286 Tatung computer and very little software. What was I going to do? Mm-hmm. And so an Arab came to see me. We had finished the astroanalyst program, and I showed him the program, and he looked at it and said, how would you like to live in the Middle East and manage money for me? And so I married my Austrian girlfriend in January of 90. We landed in Abu Dhabi, and that was it. And, you know, I inherited a portfolio in the late 91. Those guys left, so they gave the technology portfolio to me. Cool. Because they knew I had done my own programming, and uh-huh. they saw me, you know, I could do exotic things like format a floppy disk, which most people didn't know how to do. And that was high technology in those days. And so they said, would you take it? The guys doing technology left. We didn't hire you for this reason, and you'll have to report to a senior fund manager. They want us to hire one. I said, oh, here we go. I have Mars opposite the midheaven. I've never gotten along with any anybody I've worked, maybe one or two people I've worked for. But people even joke with me, still see me. It says, hey, you were in touch with your old friends. There were four senior fund managers in 13 years and none of them like me. And Microsoft, Intuit, and what's the third one? Is it Oracle? They all have, they're all big software stocks. They all have a midheaven at 11 Aquarius. They all have the sun at 22 or 23 Pisces. How coincident is that?
Yeah.
Interesting.
That is really interesting.
And so one year, Jupiter and Uranus were conjunct up in Aquarius. And I said, see, when I started there, I could do whatever I wanted. It was like being in a primitive Wall Street. It was not, I said, I hope to hell they don't bring when I'm fleeing in New York over here, which they did. But there were very few rules and regulations. And the boss said, I want you to take the portfolio. It was $440 million of a $6.3 billion portfolio. I want you to, would you take these? I said, yeah. And he said, give me your report. So I went back to him. I said, look, we've got stock holdings that is, we have so little of the stock. If it goes up 10 times in value, it doesn't make any difference. It's just too small an amount. And we have 50 or 52 stocks. We only need about 30, 35. So I sold off Commodore. Remember Commodore? Prime Computer, Stratus Computer. I've forgotten the names of them by this time. The money's piling up and they don't want you to have cash. And so I wrote one ticket to buy a stock that we didn't own. And I had a huge amount of money. I wasn't sure they were going to let me do this, but $44 million, that was 10% of the whole amount. And they would never permit that in New York. As I'm walking to his office, I walk to Ali's office and he looks, I've heard of this company, Microsoft. And I said, yeah, it's a good company. Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, very good company. And he signs it. And I walked away. I was sweating. I was, I was new there.
Wow.
And that works. So,
well, Microsoft then got put into the S&P 500, which means every index fund that did not own it had to buy it. So poof, the stock took off and they all thought, this was a great start. But what I started 1 year, we had Jupiter Uranus in Aquarius around the midheaven. So when they report earnings, if you did a chart for the day they reported earnings and you saw Jupiter Uranus up around the midheaven, what kind of a report do you think that would be?
Well, sounds like
a surprise.
Yeah, surprise, a big surprise.
And so
surprise.
I said, I think we should overweight it. See, they came in with this weighting overweight. You can't own too much of it. And it was absolutely ridiculous. I flew all the way back from Abu Dhabi, 12 time zones, and I land, and they've got these new rules and regulations imposed on us. I said, you mean, I just went and visited all these companies. I got up at 6 in the morning to go up and down the California coast, and now you want me to sell the stocks? it took time to build these positions up. That's one reason they won't work for anybody else anymore. So then we got to Saturn, got to 11 Taurus, which of course is square 11 Aquarius. And so I said, we should underweight it. Well, why? Well, what you do is you go read all the research reports in Wall Street and take a red marker and go like that, and just memorize all the bad stuff. And you spout all the bad stuff at the meetings. And I said, now we understand. So we sold it off so that when it underperformed with Saturn square the midheaven, whenever they reported earnings for a year, they had Saturn square the MC.
Yeah.
And so, that's how that works.
Yeah. I mean, it also goes to show that when you're doing astrology in any, you have to know the material you're working with, whether
absolutely.
That's like working with people doing the encounter groups, seeing how the placements actually play out in somebody's life and how they manifest. You have to know people to be able to do natal astrology, and you have to really know the stock market and in and outs of companies and how everything happens in that realm to even do financial astrology. But a lot of people think they can just like watch a YouTube video and then like predict everything. But
well, I'll tell you, Isaac. You're going to ask me. Yeah.
Well,
no, I've been very fortunate. I've always had the best teachers. You don't realize it until later, but it started early on with the guy who taught me chess. He was 55 years old. I was 8, and I went to the chess club and they wound up changing the location, so I couldn't find it anymore. That was the beginning of it. And then Dr. John Perakos, who was Wilhelm Reich's student. I mean, he worked with, he worked developing bioenergetics with Al Owen.
Yeah.
And so I met all of these people. And when I got out, a guy calls me and says, a Chinese guy, can you do my horoscope? It was Frankie Zhou. Frankie was a Chinese orphan who started with $600. He started a newsletter to show us all how it's going to be done. And he went broke. He started over again, and he started trading. And over 15 years, without having a losing year, he made $32 million for himself in interstate securities. He was my client for about 11 years.
Wow.
And Frankie was born with Jupiter trine Vesta. Vesta is the asteroid that rules paper securities like bonds and stocks. And it was Eleanor Bach who got me into that.
Cool.
Wow.
I have Uranus Vesta, so my specialty is technology stocks.
Oh, cool. Ah,
cool. Yeah. I haven't even really gotten into many of the asteroids or the Uranian planets at all. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've been studying more Renaissance astrology and Vedic astrology, which
I don't know.
Yeah. Okay. But there's still a lot of, I mean, that's one of the reasons I really love the book on eclipses.
Yeah, you want to ask me something about it? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so these eclipses are whatever system you're using, the eclipse path is there, you know,
and that's true.
Happening at the same, whether you're using sidereal or tropical, eclipses are still happening at a particular point. And any other eclipses or any other planets that cross that point are still going to ping that eclipse.
That's right.
And that's one of the really amazing things about this book. And so, what got you into eclipses? What are eclipses? Like, what are the importance of eclipses and how can they be utilized?
Well, let me just say, I went to 1974, went to New York. I sat down with a Charles Jane lecture and I just got blown away. Mm-hmm. And then he had these special weekends at his house and he had, you know, full day seminars. So he and I got to know each other. Very few people realize he had worked in Wall Street in the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
And there were people I knew who knew him. And I went to a recruiter once. I said, you know, I'm a young guy, I'm a blah, blah, blah. And he got to know me. He says, okay. He says, oh, this looks pretty good. He said, just don't ever tell people you use astrology. I nearly fainted. I said, how did you know that? And he said, well, I worked with Charles Jane.
Uh-huh.
And Charles was a technical analyst like I was in Wall Street. And he told me once not to change jobs. And I did. And he was right. And he always told me I should go into business for myself. And he was right. That succeeded for me.
Uh-huh.
And so Charles, as I say, if you never met him, he was a sort of a combination or a cross between Copernicus and W.C. Fields. Mm-hmm. And so he was quite a character. And he'd say, eclipses, I studied those many years. And I understand he read something about eclipses done by Jandro. And he went into the old Mason's bookstore in New York and said, what do you have on eclipses? And he started to read. And so in somewhere around 1940, was it? He started writing Planets in You, which was the column I wrote in Del Horoscope for 30 years. And it was mundane astrology. And all that material you see, I mean, I'm very grateful to Del Horoscope. They let me go to their library. They had every issue in a binder from 1935 up till 87 when I went to 88. And I read every issue. And they let me photocopy anything I wanted. That's why I thanked them profusely. And then they asked me to take it over. So anyway, he had a class on eclipses. And he said eclipses are the most important influence in astrology. Around the time of eclipses, he said, everything, the pace of life picks up, things that are not revealed become revealed. And it's like, I say, it brings everything up. It gives the old, if you're sitting there, like, you know, Saturn Uranus, like very rigid, and it hits the Saturn Uranus, poof, you're going to get some incident that's going to shake you out of that state. And it was Jandro who read an idea by the guy who invented tertiary progressions, the German astrologer. Can't think of his name at the moment, but he stated that the eclipse doesn't have, you know, there's not an exact, this is where Jandro's time orbs come from. It has an umbrella of energy like that. So I was born in 49. So anything else that went on, right? I was born April 25th, 49. There was an eclipse April 28th, 49. I was born 3 days before an eclipse. And if a kitten was born then, somebody opened up a store, somebody started a sports team, all those things are ruled by the same eclipse.
Right.
So if Saturn goes over the eclipse point, all of them are going to have a Saturn nine effect. If Jupiter goes over, all of them, you know, I'm sitting 1995, I'm sitting at home, and it was sort of a peak for me, and I turn on the tube, Saudi television. This is the largest Saudi oil field. It went online in 1949. It's now hitting its peak. So in other words, their biggest oil field came online when I was born.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were both hitting sort of maximums in our life.
Mm-hmm.
So it is not, this is the hardest concept that I thought an eclipse occurred on one day and then it had no effect. And
right.
Jane said he never really determined it, but he said eclipses, he doesn't have a definite date, but eclipses begin having an effect, solar ones 90 days before and as long as a year afterwards. lunar eclipse is at 6 months on either side of the eclipse. And that's with the easy part. And then it was Chandra who said, well, if you're born near an eclipse, then that eclipse must be associated with your life. And so is the shadow.
Yeah.
So that's where Jane got the idea from. And then Al Morrison and Charles Emerson picked it up. And they pointed out, which is one of the best examples, that the horoscope of Robert E. Lee, that the eclipse cuts the United States right in half, right across the Mason-Dixon line. And he had a strong Mars. His Mars was hit by the eclipse. So what, he had a martial spirit. So he went to West Point, became a soldier. And where did he fight? He fought in the Mexican-American War, 1848, and the American Civil War, 1861. Mm-hmm. And then Harriet Beecher Stowe, who wrote Uncle Tom's Cabin, and President Lincoln supposedly said to her, based on her book, so you're the little lady who made the big war. Her path cuts right across the United States and intersects at a degree of longitude that is equal to Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, which is the biggest battle ever fought in North America. And so, and of course, at that time, you had to look up, you know, where is the lunar eclipse visible? Lunar eclipse doesn't have a shadow, but I just wanted to, before I forget, there is a software program that is available free from IOTA, IOTA, that is the International Occultation Tracking Association. It's called Occult. I think it's Occult 4.0 or 4.3. It is free. And you download it and you can look at eclipse paths. You know, you can just look at them. It's not very ornate software. It's not very, you know, it's not like Solar Fire or one of the others, but you can page through eclipses like 10 years at a time, their paths. But it also has the paths of visibility for lunar eclipses.
Yeah.
So I have a client who was born on the day of a lunar eclipse. There's no question about where his birth eclipse is. That's the day he was born.
Right.
It was visible from San Francisco, sort of California, out through Southeast Asia.
Yeah.
So when I worked for him, he was running Shinsei Bank in Japan. His wife is Japanese. He's now lives in Singapore, and he's head of Asian investing for a very large investment group. And so he's in Singapore, his wife's from Tokyo, and his two daughters live in California. That's all under the shadow. Well, there's no shadow. It's the area of visibility.
Right.
So that's how lunar eclipses work. And they also, like we have coming up here, you know, maybe it's next year. I think next year the eclipses are 10 Libra, 10 Aries.
Yeah. This
2025.
Yeah, 2024, it's 19 Aries.
Yeah. Well, those two eclipses, if you look back, they operate. The next thing you'll find is that they operate as pairs. Uh-huh. And as Charles Jane said, if you have an eclipse, now here's where Jane comes in. You know, Chandra comes up with the ideas, and Jane would explore them and expand on them. Mm-hmm. But an eclipse on your sun greatly motivates your willpower. It makes you do something. Mm-hmm. You suddenly all the tools. I need guys to do coding. So an eclipse hits me and suddenly the guys are available and suddenly I'm off and running. If an eclipse is opposite your sun, everything goes against you. Like the eclipse was only a quarter of a degree from an opposition to Donald Trump's sun during the 2020 election.
Uh-huh.
So you could stop looking there. I didn't even look in anybody else's horoscopes. I said, in order to top this, you would have to have an eclipse exactly opposite your sun with less than a quarter of a degree orb, and I'm not going to find that. So that was not his opponents. But I say to people, it's like being knocked down on a soccer field. You know, one minute you're running along, next minute you're looking up at the sky. Huh. And if you remember the Profumo affair in 1963, where John Profumo had an eclipse on his sun and he was going to become the prime minister of England. He was a defense minister. And 6 months later, it's revealed that he's consorting with prostitutes and stuff like that. And he had to resign his position. The eclipse was opposite his sun.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Now, if you put the eclipses on his chart, it equals stuff like Venus Hades, which right out of the book is prostitutes, and the asteroid Sappho, which has a great deal to do with sexuality. And so it was hidden before, and the eclipse is hit, and boom, it's all blown into public view.
Quick question. In the case of an eclipse, so if an eclipse is happening when you're born, that's a pretty obvious association. But sometimes there can be like 2 or 7 eclipses in a given year. Yeah. So how would you identify which eclipse is going to be most effective for you?
Yeah, that I spent a lot of time on in the book. And I said to Charles Jane, so it's the first thing, you know, the only thing I had ever read was an AFA bulletin which said the prenatal eclipse. And I said, it's the pre, and he said, no, which is, you know, Charles talked like this. And he said, Jandro found that for one of the American presidents, his natal eclipse was 1 year from his birth. So wow. What I do is I go plus or minus 1 year from the birth. I look at all the eclipses. Uh-huh. Now, there are certain sweethearts like me where I'm born April 25th, there's an eclipse April 28th. So
that's
where do you start? You're not going to start in October with the October
eclipse. No, you start there, yeah.
And it landed on my Venus in the fourth house. I've always lived in beautiful places because my father was a builder. And my father liked Chinese architecture. And so I always, you know, had a beautiful home in Abu Dhabi. And then there are people like President Bill Clinton, where he's born 2 months from one eclipse and 4 months from the other. So you look at both.
Yeah.
So there was an eclipse on his midheaven. Is he career oriented? Yeah.
Yeah.
Is it on his sun, moon, midpoint? Do women play a part? Does his woman partner play a part in his life? Yes. So that's his eclipse. That's his natal eclipse. And then there were those difficult cats born in between, you know, 3 months before and after. So if the guy is a writer and the eclipse of the solar eclipse landed on his Mercury, see, what it does is the eclipse at your birth energizes whatever it hits for the rest of your life.
That's why it's important to know.
So that's why if you have a full moon on your Mercury, you may sit down and write an article for a magazine. But when you have an eclipse on your Mercury at birth, it stays with you. You have this compulsion to write. Or if it's on your Mars, compulsion to, you know, to do something. And it may be off in a cadent house somewhere. So then I go to the second method. You know, I said to Charles Harvey, I said, Charles, you know, I've got two different eclipses here. One runs through South America, through like Brazil or whatever, and the other one's North Africa. And he told me, he said, well, I went to North Africa to study it, and I ran out of money. And I ran, and, it, you know, it landed in a tough spot in this chart. And he said, I was essentially destitute for a while until I got out of North Africa. And my studies, I was studying literature and artwork from Brazil and those areas under the other eclipse path. So in that case, I decided both of them were equally important. I couldn't decide which was more or less important.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then so the eclipses are going to energize a points in any chart. And you can kind of choose which points you want to emphasize as well.
Yeah. If it gets eclipsed again, you can head for the hills. I mean, it's going to re-energize it all over again. Right. And these are major changes. As Charles Jane would say, one of the most powerful eclipses, powerful effects is to have an eclipse on your birthday. If it's exactly on your birthday, your life is up for grabs. It's faded. If I didn't give you all this information, but if something occurs in the week before an eclipse, it's important. Anything that happens plus or minus for a week around an eclipse is important. But 1 week before means the results turn out faded and unexpected.
Yeah.
It's not under your control. It's like herding pussycats.
Yeah.
And the week after, it's important, but it is not as faded.
Okay.
But the day of the eclipse is the most faded. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Karl Marx was born the day of a solar eclipse. The shadow goes right through Russia. It ends in England. Where is he buried? He's buried in England. So
that's so wild. So you can see the progression of someone's life with the life of the eclipse path is kind of what you've been saying. Like,
it's an area that is important to you, whether you want it to be or not.
And yeah.
When I first got into this, it was very primitive days of software and hardware too. And the only program I could get was from Zephyr Software in Pittsburgh. It was an astronomy supply house. And I got a DOS program called Eclipse Master. And it would show you, and the software I just told you about, Occult from IOTA, it will show you the area of, the eclipses in the early days, the eclipse paths in the astrology programs would not show you the area if it was not a total eclipse, if it was just a shadow. But the Zephyr software did. And my eclipse at April 28th, 1949 at 7 Taurus is right in Eastern Europe, right over Austria.
And now you're in
Austria.
I go to school and I meet a guy. He says, you should study the economics of Ludwig von Mises, the Austrian School of Economics. And it turns out Eva Broek, who was the wife of Dr. John Barrancas, who trained us, was a psychic and a medium born in Vienna, Austria. My wife is from Vienna and now I live in Vienna.
That's wild.
And you could go on and on with that. So it marks an area that will be significant for you for the rest of your life.
And like a lot of people these days, they hear about eclipses and they just like want to run right to the path of the eclipse and like watch the eclipse with the protective eyewear. Sure. And like, Can you talk about the energy of eclipses and kind of like spell out like what, certain eclipses can mean? And like, are you the type of person to go run and watch an eclipse when it happens,
No.
like in the line?
Oh.
Didn't think so. But yeah, can you talk about why?
About
About
another
why not? Why you wouldn't go, into
so in
the
like
line of the eclipse?
my tradition in the in Vedic astrology, eclipses are, and actually in traditional most traditional astrology, eclipses are uniformly malefic for most of the
Like
time.
a
Like
warning
they're a
signal,
warning
as
signal.
Jane says.
In Jyotish, you should be like fasting and doing mantras inside during the eclipse. But like, and I've been seeing like festivals popping up during in the path of the eclipse to like watch the eclipse, a bunch of people gathering together to see it together. And to me, that sounds kind of crazy. And I've already been seeing like 6 months before that festival is supposed to happen, there's a massive division in the festival community. They brought a headliner that is very divisive, and so like half the people that were going to go are not going to go. So it's like created a bunch of discord already. But that's the kind of stuff I'm seeing. But there, yeah. So what is your perspective on the eclipse energy?
Well, I mean, I don't start any major new projects in the week prior to an eclipse. If you do, as Charles Jayne said, if you do, you're going to be forced to make significant changes afterwards in order to reach your goal, because things are simply not going to work out. And this is very easy in mundane astrology. And he did all the astrology of World War II, and he used the eclipse path very extensively. So I always advise people to wait the week after the eclipse, but I always take note of the people that I meet and the impulses that I have. And it's
Interesting.
more or less, it sort of heats up. It's like this: it heats up, but it goes up to a peak, and then it slackens off. So there's nothing really spectacular most of the time that happens on the day of the eclipse. But next year we have the eclipses at 10 and 11. Libra will be conjunct and opposite the sun of the Islamic People's Republic of Iran. And the last time that occurred, the first eclipse was on their sun. They were developing missile technology. 6 months later, the eclipse was opposite their sun. The United States, through embargoes, prevented them from doing it. So that's the effect of the conjunction and the opposition. Also, the modern state of Germany was formed on the day when there was an eclipse at, I think it was 10 Libra. I mentioned that in my book. And so the natal eclipse for Germany is going to be eclipsed again, which means they're probably going to question the basic foundations of the state and whether, with all the people they've admitted in, whether they're going to, well, kick them out or keep them all in and force them. What do you do? How do you make people assimilate? I don't know how you do that. And so that is 2025. And there's one thing important to keep in mind is that the eclipse paths go back west 120 degrees per eclipse in the same Saros cycle. So if you go 120 after 18, an eclipse, a Saros cycle eclipse is repeated every 18 years. So you go 18 years is 120 degrees, 36 years is 240. Well, what's three times that is 54, and that's 360. Eclipses are visible from the same part of the Earth every 54 years, which sets up a 54-year cycle. So if you're writing mundane astrology for Del Horoscope, you just deduct 54 from whatever year you're in and start reading what happened.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So
Wait,
if
can
you
you
deduct,
describe the Saros cycle? What is that again?
well, to say when a new series of eclipses begins, it begins either at the extreme North Pole or the extreme South Pole. It's
Okay.
about 1,300 years long, and it's about 70, 72 eclipses times 18.
Okay.
And the first eclipses and Charles Jayne was the first to ever write about this. And my old friend Bernadette Brady mentions this in her book, The Eagle and the Lark, that, what I can gather from my own work and their work is that, two tribes have a battle in the middle of the desert in the year, whatever year it was. And this forms the modern foundation for a state. And 18 years later, something happened. We probably don't even know what. 18 years later, 18. But after 54 years, let's say there's an invader. And this is how literally how Bahrain started. A bunch of raiders rode into the, is it Kuwait or Bahrain? It's Kuwait. They rode into that area and they knew they were coming. So everybody pulled together under the Al Sabah family because they had the most children. That's how you got to be big family. And when the raiders saw their unity, and they rode away. And that was the foundation of the modern country of Kuwait.
Wow.
It's been that way ever since. And so as you go further, 70, if you go through like 35 or 36 eclipses, then you, if you start at the South Pole, then you're going north. If you start at the North Pole, you're going south. And the eclipses in the middle of the series are the ones that are going to cast the biggest shadows, because they're going to cast a huge shadow across the Earth. Maybe it's out in the water, maybe it's across land. Wow. And you do that, technically speaking, if you look, whatever, if you have solar fire, run a series, a Ceres cycle series, run the whole thing, and look at a value called gamma. Gamma is where you draw a straight line between the sun, the moon, and the Earth. Mm-hmm. And if it's 0.00, that means there's a straight line that goes through all three bodies, which you're probably not going to find, but it comes very close. That is what I call the central eclipse, because it is in this, or the center eclipse. It's in the center of the Ceres cycle. So that's the most important eclipse in the whole cycle. So theoretically, that's when this empire that started when two tribes fought it out many years earlier, uh-huh. that's theoretically when it peaks, and then it starts to mature and go downhill, but other paths start. Mm-hmm. And you know, the foundation for the modern state of Iraq is the Battle of the Zab River in the year 1250, because the first thing they did was they established the city of Baghdad. Well, Baghdad is still a city, and yeah. you know, most people, if you talk to the Gulf Arabs, you know, the Arab cultures are very different. Mm-hmm. And you know, they say, well, Bill, they're bad people up there from the beginning, and they're known for their treachery and their cunning. Huh. And so that flavor still stays there. And so that Ceres cycle relates to Iraqi culture.
Right. Yeah.
And during the Spanish-American Wars, I pointed out that the American eclipse path series and the Cuban one intersected at that time. And so the America fought Spain over possession of Cuba, because both eclipse series were activated at the time.
Yeah. Yeah, that's another interesting point too, about that you make in the book too, about natal charts. And like, there are, yeah. it's not like there's just one chart for a country. Like no, one, yeah. there's a series of charts, and it matters yeah. where these eclipse points ping those charts. So, and you mentioned this about the US chart. Like we, oftentimes we just use the Sibley chart as yes. like, but there's also like other very important times that are just as important to look at when you're looking at how the yeah. eclipses move. Yeah. So there are also in the US this year, we have some big eclipses. So the total eclipses, the ones that are in the middle of the Ceres cycle, those are the more important ones.
Yes.
And the solar ones are more, you have a whole list of what makes an eclipse more important or less important in the book, yes. which is pretty sweet. But being in the middle of Ceres cycle is one, being a solar eclipse is one, being close to, if there's other unusual things happening in the sky, that's also important. But so this one in the US is actually pretty big, because it's a total solar eclipse. It cuts the US exactly in half, and then it intersects another total solar eclipse that also cuts the US in half.
And you said in the book that sometimes when that happens, when it cuts a country in half, that it can indicate civil war.
Yes.
Yeah. And then so those two total solar eclipses cross in. Actually, let me see if I can find this. I'm going to share a screen and find this. So this is one of the, this is where the 2017 and the 2024 eclipses cross right in the middle of the country. And then let's see. There's another one. And this is where the eclipse of October 14th of 2023 and April 28th of 2024 hit right in Texas. So to me, that shows like a lot of potential divisions and some big things happening in the U.S. Like, you know, the people talk about like the great breakup of the U.S. breakup. What are your thoughts on that? Do you see that as a potential with these eclipses or no?
Well, first of all, let me just say that people, unfortunately, you know, Dell Horoscope ceased publication. And
wow.
and to do mundane astrology, I wrote a whole book called Mastering Geopolitical Prediction. And I spent a lot of time just explaining how to get set up to do it, to get a database.
Right.
So I have, it's a long process. It's a lot of work. But when you're writing every month, and, you know, I did it for 30 years. I did 13 columns a year, plus the other ones, I probably did 450 to 500 forecasts. And I could go to, I still have the database, but I just don't keep it fresh. And I don't do all the work I used to do because I'm not that motivated to do it now. So I can't really give you, I'd have to really research it to give you, but I can tell you this, that I do think we're headed for a great deal of difficulty. And it starts with the Jupiter-Saturn conjunction chart, in which the Jupiter-Saturn conjunction was one Aquarius, and the sun was at zero Capricorn. I had to go all the way back to the year 300 to 400 to find any Jupiter-Saturn conjunction chart that had the sun at zero cardinal, which means an equinox or a solstice. The prior solar eclipse was at zero Cancer. And that was exactly opposite the zero Capricorn sun. And that was one of the last things I wrote for Del Horoscope. I said, I can't find another configuration like this in, you know, a written history.
Yeah, and those are like the world points, the cardinal
those are the points. The world points, if you don't know, if you're anything that happens at the world points comes out directly in the world. So if you're an author, you want Mercury at the world point when you're born. When you release your book, you want Mercury at the world point. A lot of people, you know, they don't come out. I think most of us didn't know where South Africa, a lot of people didn't know where South Africa was until the sun progressed to zero Cancer. Then suddenly it was in the news with Nelson Mandela, and it works for people too. So that means the whole world is going to be affected by the Jupiter-Saturn conjunction, and you cannot leave out the eclipse path, the eclipse. In June, when that eclipse occurred, the Great Reset was announced. And so I said, what? They want to do something with the entire world. They want us all to eat bugs and drive electric cars. And I said, that's what these charts represent.
Yeah.
And the Jupiter-Saturn conjunction is at one Aquarius. The inauguration of the current American administration, the sun is at one Aquarius. Where is Pluto right now?
One Aquarius. We're almost there.
You got it. And there's going to be two more transits over it. And if you look at the inauguration chart, the sun is 4 degrees from Saturn and by progression reached there a couple of weeks ago. So I just told people, the people I speak to at institutional level, don't ask me why, but everybody wants to know. I went to Stevens Institute of Technology to a meeting of quantitative analysts who study the stock market. And I was the only person there who I think was not Indian. And so the guy who's the head of it, I've seen your name. We shook hands. And I said, well, what type of work do you do? I said, work with cycles. I said, well, if you tell me why it happens, then I'll believe it. And that's all of Wall Street. Well, this stock's going to go way up or way down. Why? And I'm thinking, well, because an eclipse is hitting their Saturn, but I can't say that.
Yeah.
Right.
And so it's helpful to know these things. It's helpful to have, you know, when Trump got, I said Trump would get elected and people didn't believe me. And I said, it's going to start off a 4-year period of prosperity. And I said, but I didn't think he'd get reelected. Well, we don't understand. If it's so prosperous and he's so successful, why won't he get reelected? I said, yeah, I really don't know that. But it was because the eclipse is opposite his sun.
Yeah. And he was also born on an eclipse.
So. Yeah.
He was born on a lunar eclipse. And like one of my clients only needs 5 hours of sleep a night. That's what an eclipse will do for you.
Yeah. So.
So it all starts. It starts with that. And so I said, when the progressed sun hits his Saturn and Pluto hits the one Aquarius, which it will do, I think, is in the next week or two, I said that February would be a very bad month for the current American administration. I was looking at those charts. Progressed sun going over Saturn in the inauguration chart, Pluto hitting, because, and very important, I forgot to mention it, the sun in the inauguration chart is one Aquarius. The Jupiter-Saturn conjunction is one Aquarius. If you look at the charts, they're both on their respective Uranus-Pluto midpoints. In those charts, Uranus-Pluto is drastic change, especially as my friend Faith McInerney would say, drastic change in financial position. So I looked at that, and when they started talking about, you know, forcing electric cars down everyone's throat, you know, because when I was in Wall Street in the 70s, you know, I was fresh from the 60s. So I went to the electric utility analyst, a guy. I said, Art, how come we don't have like sunshine electricity? And, you know, why don't we have with solar power? And he said, wow, Bal, that's a nice idea. But, and he pulled out an analysis and they explained what had to be done and how much it would cost. He said, nobody's going to pay that for electricity.
Yeah, they don't have embedded energy involved.
You have to wait until somebody, brilliant people, invent something that lowers the cost. You can't force it. But this is Uranus-Pluto. You've got now parking lots full of electric cars nobody wants. And,
yeah. So we also like have that. We also have Uranus going into Gemini again to 2025.
Yeah.
So that's another like the Uranus return for the U.S., which off you know coincides with some pretty big moments. So there's a lot going on in the U.S. in the U.S. chart, and the eclipses are part of the picture.
Are you talking about like the Revolutionary War and Civil War as pretty yeah, big so moments?
The Revolutionary War, Civil War, World War II moments. Mm-hmm. So there's you know it's. And this is one of the things that as I've learning astrology, and I'm still a novice, you know, I think you have to be continuously learning, but there's, it's so complicated. There are so many moving parts and you can't just look at one thing or two things. You have to see everything in context and then you have mm-hmm. to know the context. So yeah, just throwing up a couple paths isn't going to do it. You have to look at all the paths and how, and what everything's pinging. But I did look and see that this because there's the Saros cycle and then there's the Metonic cycle and that goes to the exact degree.
Yep.
And so the last one of those was 2020 was 2005, and Hurricane Katrina was 2005, and then there was also Israel pulled out of Gaza and created like the boundaries around Gaza basically in 2005. And so another thing you say in the book is that it's not like there's a necessarily causative mechanism, but it's like if the same eclipse happens and something's happening in Denmark and in Thailand, then those
simultaneity, but there's no causality. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, let me just try and answer your question about what's happening. See, I started it's yeah. those two charts, I think are key. And, you know, my feeling when I saw this Uranus Pluto and saw it was happening, they're going to try now to force, you know, no coal-fired or gas-fired ovens to make pizza in New York? And they're going to try and force, they're going to double down Uranus, Pluto, force it, and there's going to be a backlash. And I have not looked at the election yet, but Neptune is going to be at zero Aries. When Neptune was at zero Libra, it was the end of World War II. And part of the deal at the end of the war was the dollar became the reserve currency of the world. And sitting over here in my shelf is Monetary Sin of the West by Jacques Rouef, who was de Gaulle's economist. And he said, well, the Americans made it the currency of the world. We had all the guns and the A-bomb. Nobody was going to say no. And,
right.
But what they started doing is printing many more dollars than we had gold. In other words, they started inflating the currency and they exported inflation all around the world. Because if you're in Brazil or you're in Japan and you've got the central bank has a coffer full of dollar bills and saying, well, look at these bills are equivalent to gold. So we can issue more of our local currency. Neptune at zero Libra, a world point, they exported inflation everywhere and they've overdone it. Mm-hmm. And so Neptune's going to hit zero Libra. And so I predicted that there's going to be a serious challenge to the, now this is the advice I would give to clients. It's going to be a serious challenge to the U.S. as the reserve currency of the world. And if you don't know what that means, it means if you want to trade in anything from one country to another, you have to exchange your local currency for a dollar. And then you send it to the other guys and then they can convert it back. So that it makes an artificial demand for dollars. If you didn't need to do that,
mm-hmm. yeah,
the demand for dollars would fall away, which means the dollar's value would fall right. overseas. And the prices of everything, if you want a Mercedes-Benz, you probably have to sell your house to buy it because it comes from another country. But yeah. as somebody pointed out, Saturn is conjunct Neptune. So how could that is deflationary. How could the two exist at the same time? Well, it's very simple. If you're in, and I have a lot of friends who are European fund managers who own property in Florida, in the United States, or California, or Colorado, what's going to happen to the value of their homes? Mm-hmm. It's going to go down. See, and all, their prices, if the dollar plunges, it's going to be worth a lot less than what they paid for it. You know, but here we would expect, we if you want to take a holiday in Costa Rica or Europe, the cost is going to go way up. So you've got deflation on one side and you've got inflation on the other. That's the mix of the two. And then 2020, when the Uranus return occurs, of course, the first one was the Civil War. The second one was World War II. I think we're going to have another Civil War. The states are already dividing up. And if you read the period leading up to the Russian Revolution, you had what, red states and white states? Now we've got, what was it, red and blue?
Yeah.
And then following that, what I think is the most important thing, the last time I saw Udo Rudolph, the patriarch of the Uranian, the Hamburg School, he said, Bill, do you know what the most important planetary aspect is coming up in the future? I said, yeah, the conjunction of Hades and Kronos in the year 2030, 31. And he said, that's right. Because Hades, from the, now this is from the teachings of the Pathwork Group and Eva Parakos, Hades is the lower part of the nature. If I wanted something from somebody, I'd clonk them on the head and take it. Kronos is the higher part of the nature. And Eva Brock used to go, Eva Parakos, when she married John, used to go into trance and say, we consist of a higher self, a lower self, and the mask. So I immediately associated the Kronos with the higher self and Hades with the lower self. And that conjunction is right on the sun of the United States right now as we're speaking. And what is the concern about the president? Hades is deterioration. You also have Dianne Feinstein was going downhill. She died. And then you had the senator from Pennsylvania. And also if you go now, I can get the news here while I'm watching Wall Street during the week. And there's, black people out in Chicago, solidly Democratic, all screaming for Joe Biden's head because they're giving away stuff free to the incoming illegal aliens. They don't have to get any vaccinations or any physical checkups and no background checks. And they're giving stuff for free. Right.
It's kind of like Joe Biden and it's the whole elite class is senile.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, the elite class is Kronos. So Hades and Kronos will be exactly conjunct. If you put it on a 90 degree dial and you set it for the last one in 2031, it equals Cupido, which is groups. So Hades, Kronos, Cupido, but unfortunately complicating it even further, Cupido is conjunct Ixion, which is the new dwarf planet. And Ixion, no question in my mind, has to do with Reich's psychopathic character type. In other words, you break all the rules. Ixion was a lawbreaker. Right now, the president of the United States was told that you cannot pay off student loans. The Supreme Court told him that, and he's doing it anyway. That's Ixion, breaking laws. And look at the breakdown in law and order. Ixion was right at the world point at zero Capricorn when we had those eclipses. So Ixion was in the eclipse chart June, that was at zero Cancer, that opposed Ixion. And then we had the Jupiter-Saturn conjunction in, 2019 or 2020? I'm getting lost now. But Ixion is conjunct the sun in the horoscope of the Jupiter-Saturn conjunction. And that I've never seen before. So putting it all together, it's like the world is dividing into two camps, those that are going with the people who are running the world into the ground and those who are trying to stop it. And I said to Udo Rudolph, he said, what do you think will happen? I said, you'll have to choose between God and mammon. And he said, you're right.
Oh. Okay.
So I think we're in for, and again, when you first get into astrology, you see Saturn goes over the sun of a country and you predict that, something, there's going to be some dreadful catastrophe and, Rand McNally is going to remove them from the map or something like that. It's going to be an earth. And then you figure out, well, if that's true, it would happen every 28 years. And then you begin to realize that unique stuff happens only when there are unique configurations of planets. And if it's so unique, you've never seen it before, what do you do?
You try and
piece it together.
Yeah.
You really don't know.
Right.
Yeah, you have to look at a lot of aspects. Okay. Well, I really appreciate you being here today. This was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And it's like one of the great things about being able to do this podcast is getting to read magnificent books like this, classics, and then sometimes getting to talk with people who write them and go deeper into the things that I learned. Mm-hmm. And so I really appreciate you taking time to be here today. And I also really appreciate you putting out this book because it's full of research that is really important. And I don't know where else it exists.
Mm-hmm.
So this is going to be very helpful for a lot. You want to know more about
that? Came about when I went up to Dell Horoscope and I said, hello, I'm one of your subscribers. I'm a student of Charles Jane. Can I read? Do you have a library? And they had they said, sure, here, sit down. And I started, and all this stuff, I said, this is unbelievable. This work is going to be forgotten.
Yeah.
Dell Horoscope closes down. So I extracted it all out. And then what was the other astrology magazine? Now I forget everybody's names. It was one of the early astrology magazines. It was like Dell, it was a competitor of Dell, but they had an index. And I said, oh, we have an index. We have these Jane articles. And I was able to go to the library and get all of those. I think it was American Astrology. And then, this is really unbelievable, I'm visiting a friend of mine, an airline pilot outside of London. And he says, by the way, I was just in California. I went to an occult bookstore. Are you interested in this? And he hands to me the National Astrology Journal, I think it was called. And it's 3 years worth in a nice hardcover, glossy pages, very well done for astrology. And I opened it up, and it was where Jandro did his earliest writing. It was like 1933 to 36.
Wow.
And there were some of the foundation articles, and Jandro would write something once. And if you didn't catch it, you know, he didn't repeat it, and he didn't lecture. He didn't go to conferences. If you missed it, you missed it. And that's where I was able to pick up on their thinking very early on. That Jane and I wrote an article for somebody, I think it was Mountain Astrologer. Jane and Jandro, the precision astrologers, they thought astrology was so accurate, you should be able to predict that, you know, next week, you know, Isaac, you know, on Thursday at 4, you're going to sit down and you're going to brew a cup of chamomile tea that's going to be a bit too hot and have to wait for 6 minutes for it to cool off. That's how, and so they would invent techniques.
Yeah.
This is where ascendant arc comes from. This is where vertex arc comes from, and all these different predictive techniques. And Jane was like, Mercury is a young guy, Venus is a young girl, sun and moon. It was like characters in a play.
Mm-hmm.
And he would say, oh, and on that Thursday, he says, you ran to some men, you had a meeting with some men that was, you know, you really didn't like them. They were sort of Plutonian or controlling. I said, that's right. And how's it? And he was using a multiplicity of arc techniques, half hold and double arc. And so.
Yeah, it's amazing to me how powerful some of these predictive techniques are too, because it's like in the popular culture now in astrology, like astrology has kind of blown up in a way. And a lot of people are getting into like Hellenistic astrology because it's more traditional, or like into Vedic astrology, like I am, because it's like very, very traditional. And there's like, you can do a lot of good prediction in there. And we think of Western astrology now as mainly psychological, but actually there has been this undercurrent the whole time of very powerful predictive techniques, you know? And so I think that's under-recognized in today in some astrology circles, which are in more popular, watered down in a certain way too. But yeah, I really appreciate you putting this book out, mm-hmm. and you making these techniques available to people, because yeah, if those Jandro and Jane could have done all this work and then been forgotten, you know?
That's right.
Important. Well, thank you so much, Bill.
Yeah, and how can people get a hold of you or find this book, find your work?
It's billmeridian.com.
Perfect.
Awesome. And my email is bill@cyclesresearch.com.
Awesome.
And I'm here in my home in Austria until I think I have to go to Abu Dhabi in April, and early May I'll probably go to the United States for 6 months.
Cool.
Excellent.
Well, thank you again for being on the show.
You're welcome.